Cyber 24 is presented by our friends at Valcom. Valcom is a Utah-based IT solutions and services provider with a drive for getting IT right. From ironclad security to computing and beyond, Valcom's 35-plus years means they have the experience and the expertise to help your business from desktop to the data center. Check them out at vlcm.com. And welcome to the Cyber 24 podcast, the weekly pod dedicated to helping business and governmental leaders better understand the often intimidating topic of cybersecurity so you can make better decisions to keep your organization safe. My name is Marty Carpenter of 24/9. I work in strategic communication, public affairs, and government relations, so we're all learning this cybersecurity stuff together. And today's topic is digital extortion. Our guest is Michael Orozco. Great conversation we had. Michael is with Morgan Franklin Cybersecurity. He's the Managing Director of Advisory Services at Morgan Franklin Cybersecurity. Our conversation today covers things like why cyber criminals are stealing personal and business information, not just for immediate use, but for future use and digital extortion, why they're targeting specific types of people and sectors and organizations, and who he thinks is at the greatest risk. We're also going to talk about attack techniques, what organizations like yours should do once they have been attacked and that information is compromised, or even you as an individual, and what steps people can take to organize or take steps to mitigate these risks in the future. Really interesting conversation with Michael Orozco from Morgan Franklin Cybersecurity. So Michael, let's start here for our audience. My introduction is not good enough, so let's have you tell us a little bit more about yourself, your career, your background, and then tell us a little bit about your role with Morgan Franklin Cybersecurity.
Absolutely. I've worn a few hats throughout my career. I started off my career in financial planning and analysis in merger and acquisition work, and then started the technical route from the beginning, learning what a server is and physically looking at it, pulling boards through database design, architecture design, and then went up the management consulting route as a manager, senior manager, partner, and national managing partner. So I've worked for a couple of the largest firms in a leadership position with hands-on keyboard expertise. My particular area of focus has always been on the nation state, national security, and syndicate attacks on capabilities that are waged against our national infrastructure, whether that be financial services, whether that be life sciences and development, R&D. At Morgan Franklin Cybersecurity, I lead the advisory services, which takes into account all of the business capabilities tied in and supported by cyber across cloud and premise, et cetera. And I've served both Eastern and Western Europe, as well as Latin America and North America.
So one of the things that we, that's all really fascinating, and I'm sure the kind of work that you can find very interesting and the type of thing that's always changing. We want to talk today a little bit about digital extortion, which everything about that phrase just sounds super scary. Digital extortion. Why are cyber criminals stealing personal and business information for not like immediate use, but future use, and to use as extortion or as leverage for extortion?
It's really a combination of technology meets culture. And what I say by that is today, something that you may say that folks will laugh at in a joke, maybe a year from now, may be offensive, sensitive, something that you wouldn't necessarily want to be as proud about. And the images, the voices, and certainly what you write lives on in cyberspace forever, indefinitely. It could be found. Nothing is ever erased. Delete is not really a true deletion and removal from the space. It just gets it off your system. Doesn't mean the rest of the world can't dig it up and find it. So oftentimes, what happens is whether you are intending to leave a fingerprint or an image out there, you're doing it. So that's where they tell you, since the beginning of the first cell phone that you own, be careful what you push out there. Be careful what you send. Everyone's watching. Don't send, don't publish, don't transmit anything that you wouldn't want to stand up in front of your peers, your friends, and your parents and proudly display what's on your phone. So what happens is these cyber criminals are capitalizing on the notion that there will be images that are personal, private. There will be texts that are not meant for public distribution, and they're out there. You sent them. Somebody caught them. Somebody saw them. Somebody dug them up. And they either can tarnish your image, they can be taken out of context and really damage your brand, especially if you represent a firm, represent a particular point of view. And certainly if you're sponsored in any way, whether you are an athlete, an athlete, a business individual, or any other personality, or just a day-to-day individual could be made to transform themselves and look not in the best light when things are considered.
So are these cyber criminals targeting specific types of people? I mean, I think you could say, well, celebrities get nudes leaked, for example. That's sort of the example that comes to mind. But are they targeting specific types of people, regular people, non-celebrity people, sectors, business sectors, or organizations? Do you think are at the greatest risk, and why?
In the times we live in, a lot of people are being targeted from all sectors. So, for example, if you're a parent that opposes a particular school board notion, whatever that may be, it could be made to embarrass you, humiliate you, silence you, cancel you. If you're an athlete, of course, and you have endorsements, and you participated in the trading of photos of individuals that may not have known that they were being photographed or shared among friends. And also you're crossing into legal jurisdictions when you have an 18-year-old or 17-year-old sharing pictures of a minor that could be your girlfriend, significant other, but they're just not of the age of maturity yet for legal age. That becomes delicate. What also starts to happen is if you're an individual, for example, that stands for a brand that needs to be very cognizant of its broad range and spectrum of constituents, readers, consumers, et cetera, and you say something that should have been better thought out. The words were not exactly what you meant to say at the time can be brought. And so any of those individuals have a stake in the game. And like any other extortion, folks are willing to pay. Right. And they're willing to pay handsomely for it in some cases. In other cases, they're willing to do whatever they can not to have that that history brought back to life. And this even happens in, you know, your average individual who may have gone through a traumatic experience and now has a new life. For example, they may have committed a felony in the past. They paid their due to society. They're now someone of a very quiet life. Their lives have moved on. And somebody digs up the history and says, look, you know, do you really want this coming back to haunt you? You know, that happens. Now, also added to it could be things that people transmit that include trade secrets. You knew that there was going to be a merger. You knew there was going to be an insider financial gain. You had prior knowledge. So all of a sudden that verges on, you know, painting you and potentially not having supported the laws, you know, as written and on their intent. So it gets quite juicy at times. But of course, nudies and personal pictures, those continue to be the utmost easiest ones to get. Nobody wants those at the marketplace.
Yeah. It's really interesting because, you know, this is not so much a cybersecurity discussion as a philosophical one, maybe. But, you know, the upside is, hey, there's sort of a general pressure or at least a recognition for people in society that you should behave privately like you would like to behave publicly, right? You should be, if you're a good guy on the public streets, you should be a good guy behind closed doors. And the sort of threat that if you're not, that can get out, that's you know, a positive, I think generally people would say. But on the other side of that, it's, yeah, what if everybody, like, no one's perfect. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone's got something that they don't necessarily like. That's why we have a private and a public life. And even if you did something relatively egregious and, like you said, paid the price for it, being able to erase that to where it doesn't come back, it's just not really a possibility. So you sort of never get out from under the thumb of a past mistake, no matter how much you do to try to correct the mistake. So it's a really interesting philosophical situation to be in, but it brings to the point that you're making. There is really something against almost anyone that could be leveraged against them because of that separation all of us appreciate between a public and private life. Hey, this is for this audience. It's not for everybody. And even if it's relatively harmless, the context was such with a smaller group. That's really interesting that everyone's got a leverage point, essentially.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even if you take a look at any text messages that you shared with a spouse or a loved one in a moment of a heated debate or an argument, and you play it back out of context, it doesn't make you look like the greatest person, right? Mm-hmm. It just, those words don't sound proper when they're taken out of context and published abroad.
Yeah. And you can get, you know, it's the comedian Bill Burr who says you can get a bad read on a text message or like a court, like you could say something with a certain connotation or inflection or context, but when they read it out of a, when they read it out in court, you know, you're not going to get the best read. You're going to get the straightforward read. And that's not always accurate or reflective of what you actually said. We've seen that here. There are some political races going on here in Utah where you'll see, hey, so-and-so said this, but was that edited to be taken out of context? And then, oh, so-and-so said this in a text message. Well, say it out loud how you meant to say it, and you can see that the context could change depending on if the inflection's here or there. So really, really interesting stuff.
Absolutely. Even when it comes to business and brands, if you take an individual's true or honest reflection of a brand that's a big brand that sponsors them, and they'll say, you know what, I don't really use the product. I mean, but they pay me well for it, and it is a good product, but I personally wouldn't buy it. Well, geez, that has an impact, right? It's a big impact. You don't want that leaked out. The other one that's very prevalent is any type of communication that was used during a divorce. And look, a divorce for anyone who's ever been through it, 50% of the country has unfortunately gone through that experience, they're adversarial. Nice things are not said. Nobody ever goes into a court to say, we love each other, the most amazing person, but we have to part ways. There's usually a reason, and the reasons are exaggerated, and there's a lot of emotion to it. And when you read that back, it just doesn't paint a good light, or certainly when, you know, children in custody are involved. So now that gets played out, and it just doesn't make anyone look at, in any kind of good light. So that gets played out quite a bit, and extortion comes in, and people just are very willing to say, I'll pay you something to just make it go away. Leave me alone. Pick the next person you want to mug with this.
Yeah, exactly. So what attack techniques are they using most frequently to steal the information?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the most common ones is when individuals, anyone, goes into an airport, concert arena, shopping mall, restaurant, and use the public Wi-Fi. Public Wi-Fi is not encrypted. It's not protected. It's not meant to protect you. It's meant to give you access. And many will immediately flash you a notice. What also happens too is, you know, if you're in a crowded part of an airport and there's flight delays on a rainy night, you just, a bad actor can sit there, open up a false Wi-Fi to say, you know, gate 63 free Wi-Fi high speed. And, as a courtesy, and you'd be surprised how many people log onto it. So now they're going through a nefarious actor's laptop. He's looking at everything that's on your system, looking at everything you're sending, copying pictures of it, copying snaps of all the information that's there. The other one, of course, is, you know, laptops that are lost. And, you know, when you sign into any type of phishing application, they're capturing your first name, your last name. Typically, they're getting you to sign into your password, and that happens also through habituation. So, for example, I have several for credit cards that after I've contacted customer service, they will send me an email asking me how their representative did. So you become habituated to getting that. So it's not unusual that credit card provider will issue you a survey. But they also know that some of the major names are typically in most people's wallets. And so they'll send one out and say, look, we're offering you a spiff because you've been such a good customer. We're going to give you a credit line increase. We're going to give you some cash back, a new promotion. We're going to try with you. Just fill in your name, your address. Can you confirm your social security number and log into your application? Well, you're logging into an app that doesn't exist because it's theirs. And it'll give you a failure and tell you, please log in tomorrow. We're overwhelmed with the offer. The damage is done. You just gave away your password, gave everything, and now you're captured. Somebody's in. So either they steal money, they capture your credentials, they'll log on as you and publish things that aren't meant to be said, or they take over your accounts.
Organizations worldwide spend billions of dollars a year on cybersecurity, yet continue to be overwhelmed by security alerts, cyber attacks, and data breaches. Why? Because managing security based on multiple point solutions and manual processes cannot keep pace with the ever-changing threats and environments. Your team just cannot react fast enough. With Checkpoint Software Technologies, you can take back your security. With Checkpoint Infinity, you can consolidate all your security functions in one place for stronger security. With a single console and one unified policy, you can manage all of your security, including your users, devices, data, applications, wherever they are. With Checkpoint Infinity, you can achieve the best security against both known and unknown threats across all networks, cloud, and mobile devices, all managed centrally, enabling IT to tackle targeted campaigns in real time and ensure business continuity. Learn more about consolidating your security solutions with Checkpoint by visiting vlcm.com/checkpoint. You've all seen the headlines. Every 39 seconds, there's a new attempted cyber attack in the U.S. As the threat landscape becomes more complex, the need for security operations is greater than ever before. It's time to put experts in your corner. For something as important as your organization's security, having a named engineer and analyst paired with you is critical. Arctic Wolf is a leader in security operations, utilizing a cloud-native security analytics platform to deliver security operations as a concierge service. Arctic Wolf's Security Operations Center as a service is always on guard, with security experts monitoring your environment 24/7. Don't become the next headline. Learn more about Arctic Wolf's redefined cybersecurity approach at vlcmtech.com/arctic-wolf. That's vlcmtech.com/arctic-wolf. So what should organizations do once they have been attacked or information has been compromised?
I mean, the biggest thing is to understand the value of the information, how much of it is out there. In some cases, if it's something that you're willing to live with and you say, look, that was me at the time, and it is what it is. For example, if somebody comes out and says, I'm currently an athlete and I endorse no smoking, but at the time I did smoke, I had a habit. It was what it was. And I fought it and I struggled through it like many other people. And I came out the other end and it's not so bad. But if you're the face of a brand that doesn't tolerate it, and you currently are doing something that would damage the brand, and obviously what needs to be considered are, you know, the legal ramifications. Was it something you did that created the exposure and vulnerability? Was there a greater threat and act from a sophistication that targeted you, which may target other individuals? So that takes on a different tone. Is there other areas of your cell phone, smartphone, or applications of personal life that can be compromised, because you may have that same password across all of your social media applications, all of your different, you know, accesses on your cell phone. So you need to take a look at that. And then obviously at the end of the day is weigh out the, you know, should I pay or should I not? I mean, that last question is probably the hardest one. In many cases, the rule of thumb, people tell you, well, don't pay. But then you have to weigh out the damage versus the payment. If the payment is small and negligible, but the damage is gigantic to your life and to your professional career, you may want to consider making a payment, right? It's a cost-benefit analysis that everyone has to do.
Yeah. Is it possible to give us an idea, and maybe this just is the kind of question that's unanswerable, but like, is there a general time that they'll sit on it, sit on the information? Someone's got it. Are you seeing like, oh, they come back within a year, or I'd just be interested to know if there's some kind of normal time frame when something could kind of pop up.
So it varies and it depends on the information. If you're someone in the public spotlight, they'll probably sit on it no more than about 30 to 45 days and it's going to come out. The quicker the better. And typically the sitting time is when they're negotiating who else is willing to pay for it and syndicate it and take it out, right? If there's compromising pictures of you texting with an illicit love affair, you're a public figure, they're going to try to shop that and they're going to try to get a best price for it. If it's a political position that you've taken, it's contrary to what you currently pronounce publicly today, they're going to wait for a position where you have the most vulnerability and the most to lose. If it's personal items on your end that you just don't want out there, you know, personal photos, explicit photos or text messages don't paint you in the best light, typically they'll wait to see if the extortion is really worth it. They're going to dig in a little bit more into your background. Are you a person who's living hand to mouth? Do you have some assets? Do you have a checkbook? Are you willing to write a check? How much of a check are you typically willing to write? So if you're an individual that's, you know, just struggling to make ends meet, they may skip you. They may, you know, come after you for something small. If they're an individual that they see you shopping at the best brands at the high end mall and driving the latest model luxury car, you may get hit a little harder. It's just like anything else, is whatever the market will bear. That's the extortion. The ones that are going to last the longest are individuals that the information is worthy, but not yet. It hasn't gained enough value. Let's wait for an individual to either be making a significant career move and we know where they're going. We understand that, you know, they're going to be running for a local election, a school board position. Their contract's up for renewal. So let's wait for you to be most vulnerable and willing to pay the most. And that's where the waiting game comes in, really weighing out, when could we use this? We have a file on someone. And that's where the unknown comes in, right? Because life goes on every day.
Yeah. When we've talked about this general principle previously on this show, mostly with companies who have, you know, some type of cybersecurity incident or a ransomware, and they're deciding whether or not to pay, there's always been this element of honor among thieves, that the one thing you generally could trust a hacker was that once you paid them, they did give you back access to your system or whatever it is they may have locked you out of. Does that same thing generally exist? Like, you know, I'm thinking celebrities and athletes may be one thing, but for an average Joe and someone pops up and says, hey, I've got images of this view and this person and whatever the leverage point may be. And for this amount of money, you know, let's say it's a manageable amount of money, I'll give it back to you, or I won't publish it. I just would think that if you give in and pay, there's what kind of guarantee do you have without you being the strong arm of the law to say, this isn't going to come back. I'm not going to get the same email in 6 months asking for the same amount of money.
You know, that's a great question, because you're right. There used to be, an honor among thieves on a corporate ransomware and hacking. And what's occurred is, in many cases, they'll take your money and not give you back access to your files. Or worse yet, if you paid it too quickly, they'll come back later on and say, you know, we want your lunch money again, kind of like the bully at the schoolyard. Mm-hmm. The same thing with this situation. They may go ahead and publish it anyway. They may come back again. They may realize that this is now much more important to you than they originally estimated, and the calculation is going to go up. They're going to hit you again until you either decide to go public with it. And sometimes this is the thought process and the mechanism behind some public announcements that celebrities, endorsed athletes, and so forth were out of the blue come forth with an admission, and you're like, geez, where did this come from? Well, it's because they were probably going to be extorted for a significant amount, and it was just time to let me just come clean and let me shut this down, because they took money from me once. They're continuing to do it again, and I'll never get them off my back if I continue to pay. And especially if it's if you're an individual who has a net worth and the ability to pay, look, you're an easy target, unfortunately. And the more sensitive you are about the information, the more they will come back. And the characteristics of the honor amongst thieves has changed significantly. And a lot of it is driven by the demand economy. They demand, if you supply, they'll keep demanding again. So at some point, you got to draw the line and say enough's enough. And let me beat them to the punch and demonetize the information. Right. So, you know, there's the famous family that everyone follows on television. What they did is they monetized it. It was going to be a leak. And actually, it worked to their advantage. Right. It raised their notoriety among celebrities and a variety of every home that wants to now follow their lives. So,
yeah, really, really interesting. So what steps can people or organizations, for that matter, take to mitigate these risks in the future?
The easy ones are to really take a look at the emails that are being sent to you. Click on the sender. Make sure that if it says, the name of a financial institution or an application that you follow or a group that you're typically subscribed to, make sure that it is that. You know, it's, for example, just hypothetically to use, if you've got American Express and you get an email that says, you know, goodguys@AmericanExpress.com, that's not them. It's probably going to be, it's got to be at American. AmericanExpress.com, right? The brand, or at Apple.com. Any variety of that, that's not them. I would call it, you know, have questioned the, I would question and really look at it suspiciously. The other things you could do is just recognize that, you know, you do have a smartphone that is transmitting wirelessly across networks that are being copied. You transmit to a tower that transmits to a multiplex that transmits to an enhancer that transmits to fiber and eventually gets to a switch. There's a lot of steps for that information to be, you know, intercepted, copied, or diverted in some way. So be careful about what you put out there, because it's not going to disappear. It's not going to go away. The other pieces that I would really, you know, encourage people to be careful with, to take a look at where you access your Wi-Fi. For as tempting and comfortable as it is to have a cup of coffee at a particular little shop that has free Wi-Fi, it's convenient, but it's not something that's secure and it makes you vulnerable. I would wait and go outside until I get better signal and then use my apps there and just not log in. And lastly, the other piece is just to be vulnerable and aware, be aware of your own vulnerability and recognize that, you know, do I really want to send this? How will this read if somebody had to play it back at a moment that's not so, so private? Is it worth the while? And I'm a big believer in, you know, why don't you take a couple of breaths before you hit that send? and see if she feels passionate about it, especially if it's something that you're sending that's heated or spicy.
Yeah. A previous role for me, I was the spokesperson for the Utah governor. And we had a general rule of thumb in our administration. And that was, if you don't, because we have government record access management acts, like pretty much anything you do as a state employee, unless it's a draft or something like that, is public, right? It can be requested by media outlets and so on. And so we always just said, hey, if you don't want this to be on the front page of the Salt Lake Tribune, you know, if you wouldn't be comfortable with it being on the front page of the Salt Lake Tribune, don't put it in writing, which, you know, served to make us, I think, less efficient because it was harder to use the tools everybody uses. A lot of times there were text messages going back and forth that just said, hey, I'll call you because I can make a phone call. And that's not as, it doesn't fall under the same guidelines. Not that you're trying to do anything nefarious, but just like, hey, I don't know that I can articulate this correctly in writing, so I'm going to just call. And it's the same type of approach, right? It's that if you're not sure that this is going to be communicated clearly, or you think that there's any chance you might be embarrassed by this at some later date, images, something you've written, whatever it may be, video, don't share it.
And the other thing as well is that there are applications on the marketplace that are peer-to-peer encrypted communication devices that serve as a vehicle to help you have those very private, give you a slightly more enhanced sense of security. But even they are not foolproof. Not if you're accessing through a public Wi-Fi in a place or you get onto a Wi-Fi that's been spoofed, right? It's not a real Wi-Fi. It can't protect you from that because it's still seeing it as you're typing it and sending it from your phone. But you know, if you feel that you're at least on your own private network at home and you need to send a communication that's personal, private, there are other applications you can consider and take those under advisement. And there's a few of them out there that have really been designed, and that's their market niche, is to provide that level of privacy. But I would also encourage folks to take a look at other applications that are owned by larger conglomerates. So while the initial design of the underlying application was engineered to provide that, now that they're owned by larger conglomerates, somebody's looking, somebody's reading. Yeah. Somebody's listening. And that also goes to your devices that are at home that are allow you to speak to your television, allow you to speak to, you know, your mobile music house system. And it's asking, you know, you could ask it, what's the weather today? Should I wear a raincoat? Put on my favorite tunes from my favorite band. Well, it's listening to you and it's listening and translating the words. So when you're walking around your home and you're having conversations, it is listening. It's just discerning between you're asking it a command to find a media piece versus your own natural speech. But it is listening. And if it's listening, it's most likely being recorded.
Yeah. Good advice and really interesting insight into how this works for celebrities, athletes, businesses, and even average Joes. And Michael, if people want to know, tap into more of your expertise, where can they either follow you online or where can they connect with Morgan Franklin Cybersecurity?
They'll find me online through Morgan Franklin Cybersecurity on LinkedIn. Many of the articles that I publish on a technical basis and what I write typically is technical written in English for folks to be able to read, understand, and how to apply. They'll find it at Morgan Franklin Cybersecurity on LinkedIn or under Michael Orozco, also on LinkedIn. And I'm open to questions at any time.
Awesome. Well, Michael, we'd love to have you back sometime in the future. It was really great to have this conversation with you. Thanks so much for sharing your insight and your expertise with our audience.
Thank you, Marty. It's a pleasure.
That'll do it for this episode. I want to thank our sponsors at Valcom. At Valcom, you get much more than a dedicated IT retailer. They become an extension of your IT team. Whether you're a startup or an enterprise, Valcom has the technical sales and engineering expertise to make your business more effective and more productive. Check them out at vlcm.com. That's vlcm.com. Special thanks as well to our supporting partners, the Utah Division of Technology Services, the Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute, the Utah Attorney General's Office, the Utah Department of Public Safety, and our friends at Secuvant. A reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at cyber24_, or you can hit us up on Facebook as well. We want to hear from you in either place to let us know what you think, or if you have a topic you'd like to hear us discuss on a future episode. You can also rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. We love those 5-star ratings. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week and stay safe online.